Committee will come to order. We don't have a quorum present just yet, but Representative Hamilton is ready to go with presenting his bill, House File 564. We'll move the bill when we do have a quorum, and it'll be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. But until we can do that, Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and I'd also like to thank Representative Newton. We worked very close on this last year, and working very close on this again this year, so I greatly appreciate that as well. Mr. Chairman, I think most people are familiar with the 5% campaign. Obviously, this was a big topic here last year, and so nothing has really changed as far as my talking points and whatnot. I believe most people have heard those. Mr. Chairman, this is addresses the disability waiver reimbursement rate adjustments, and that's what it does. What I would like to do, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, is if we could take testimony from individuals now, and then we'd be, stand for questions, if that's okay.
That sounds good, Representative Hamilton. If you could please bring your testifiers to the table, and if they could introduce themselves when they come up here and offer their testimony, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kim Cry, and I live in Minnetonka. I'm a home care worker, and I became a home care worker after the experience of bringing my husband's uncle into our home while he recovered from a stroke. We were surprised at how little support is available through family, friends, neighbors, and faith communities. We learned that the home care community is an essential workforce, which provides quality of life for entire family units. The stability of this provider community is quite poor due to low pay, no benefits or career path, and demanding schedules, which include early mornings, late nights, weekends, and holidays. For these reasons, it's very hard for aging and disabled Minnesotans and their families to secure stable, quality home care. Right now, I'm providing home care services for people living with spinal cord injuries. During a regular shift, I help with the most personal of cares. Think about everything you do in the morning before you leave the house. I'll operate expensive equipment like lifts, electric wheelchairs, and accessible vehicles. I need to be emotionally and physically fit, patient, and compassionate. This isn't a job anybody can do. My presence is a part of a promise from the state of Minnesota to offer a quality of life for individuals while simultaneously saving the state healthcare dollars. My hands are agents of the state of Minnesota every day that I go to work, and they are being heavily subsidized by my middle-class family to deliver quality home care. And to give you an idea of how a family like mine is subsidizing care, let me tell you a little something that happened recently. I took my car to the shop to be worked on during my days off. At the end of the second day, we learned that it would take three more days for this repair to be completed. And this is a problem because I needed that car to get to my home care job, and there are no public transportation opportunities to get to this client's home. My net earnings for that day would be around for those 3 days would be about $120. That's how little home care workers make. The cost of a rental car for those same 3 days would be $180. So the bottom line for my family is that we were going to be losing $60 for those 3 days. I rented the car, I showed up for my scheduled shifts, and I provided the essential home care services. Fortunately, my family does not rely on my income to meet our basic needs. My husband's income provides our transportation, health care, and housing needs. So I'm able to do this work that I feel passionately about despite the low pay and lack of benefits. Typically, home care workers are not able to work at a loss, even for a day, without causing a quality of life emergency for themselves, like lack of grocery money or rent money. Most home care workers are in a constant struggle to balance the needs of their clients with their own very basic needs. This struggle for balance is what causes so many to leave the field in under a year's time, and a high worker turnover expends resources that are already limited. When my child goes to college in 3 years, I will no longer be able to do this kind of work because I will be seeking full-time employment with higher pay and benefits. This means my clients will both have one less reliable person to count on, and that really makes me sad because I care about them, first of all, and I also know how difficult and expensive it is to recruit and retain quality caregivers. A 5% wage increase won't completely solve this problem, but it is a badly needed step in improving the quality of life for home care workers and the clients we serve. There may come a time due to illness, injury, or age that changes your abilities unless significant changes are made in this area. Thank you for your time and consideration in advancing House File 564.
Thank you. There is a question, if you could stay there for just a moment. Representative
Boyd. Mr. Chair, it's mostly for us. Do you want me to offer my amendment now? Because that testimony seemed really pertinent to my 100% amendment.
We'll take amendments after all the testimony has been through. Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Toby Pearson with Care Providers of Minnesota, today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative.
And I'm Carrie Thurlow with Leading Age Minnesota, also here on behalf of the Imperative.
The section we'd like to point to is that the elderly waiver is actually funded with all of the other waivers and is therefore included in the 5% increase. And as you've heard from us before, repeatedly, every Wednesday, there are going to be more demands for services. Surprise, surprise. We also will have a higher demand for quality caregivers. We need to support the full continuum, and elderly waiver is one of those components of the full continuum. The importance of the elderly waiver program is that it allows folks to remain in a place where they call home for as long as they possibly can. This is our way of keeping some folks who do have nursing home level needs in their home rather than in a nursing home. It ends up being more cost efficient for the state. It ends up being, in most cases, where the individual wants to reside, and it ends up, practically speaking, being very beneficial to both the state as well as the individual. We do have a caregiver crisis also within not only the nursing homes, but in the home care field. And I will turn it over to Carrie Thurlow to talk more about what we're seeing as providers in the home care area.
Thanks, Toby, and good morning, everyone. Continuing the theme of what you've heard from us throughout this session, we do have new information to present to you from our most recent 2015 survey regarding turnover rates in senior housing. According to our most recent data, we've shared with you nursing home data, but on the senior housing side, employee vacancy rates are also increasing over 2014. For example, just last year, the vacancy rates for home health aides was around 5%, and now this year we're hearing reports that it is up to nearly 7.5% vacancy rates in senior housing. And along with that, turnover rates are also increasing. For home health aides, again, we're at 35% turnover rates in senior housing. So as we've discussed with you before, without addressing this caregiver crisis, it's very difficult for our providers to meet the needs of the seniors that they are serving. We do have senior housing options in some small communities, might be the only options for care in that community. They may not have a nursing home, they may only have senior housing. And for the most part, many of their residents, or in some cases, all of their residents, especially in rural communities, depend on the elderly waiver program to help pay for their needs. And so the 5% campaign is important to support the elderly waiver program, and we would ask that you support this as well.
Okay, thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the regional center counties in greater Minnesota and 4 counties here in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And I want to thank Representative Hamilton for working with us on an issue that I want to bring to the committee's attention. And this is on page 2, lines 29 through 35, extending to lines 3.7, and then on lines 6.1 through 6.14, regarding how the pay increase is implemented for public employees under collective bargaining agreements. The language you see here mirrors the language that was put in last year's bill. And we had been under the impression at the time of enactment that that would allow us to use our normal collective bargaining process whenever the subsequent contracts were negotiated to take into account these increases in negotiating new wage and salary levels for employees. But unfortunately, the guidance that subsequently came out from the Department of Human Services last summer was to the contrary. Our organization, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Association of Community Social Service Administrators all raised concerns about this, but the administration of it has not changed. And the problem is this. Our contracts for these employees cover more than those just working in our intermediate care facilities, nursing homes, or under the home and community based services program. It covers other public health nurses, other social workers, other case aides, and this creates an extraordinary problem for us in administering our contracts, because this says we have to give raises to those individuals whose jobs are funded or partially funded, which is usually the case, from these monies. But employees who are in the identical job classification with the identical tenure, with the identical education, don't get those raises. And consequently, we need language that just provides that we can negotiate this in our normal collective bargaining procedures and not provide this extraordinary exception to the normal negotiation rules. That I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Are there any other testifiers?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please announce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
All right. Good morning. My name is Chris Krebsbach. I'm Vice President of Operations at Tailwood Senior Living. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members, ladies, gentlemen. There's a need for home and community-based services, and that's what I wanted to talk about today. As more Minnesotans move into retirement in the next stages of their lives, they deserve to live a health, safe and quality life for as long as possible. All aging Minnesotans deserve this, I believe. To really make the choices to live independently and to live there as long as they're able, and to really be connected to their communities. If we keep aging Minnesotans in their communities as long as they're able, they can stay connected to their families, friends, life choices, the things that they do and have done for most of their lives, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. One of the statistics I heard recently is that 60,000 people turned 65 in the state of Minnesota last year, and 60,000 people will turn 65 next year and every year for the next 15 years. So there are a lot of people over 65 and continue to age there. I serve in about 20 different buildings throughout the state of Minnesota, assisted livings primarily. And the average person that I serve is female, is 85 years old, and lives there for about 2.5 years. So they're there for a good amount of time, and they're there at a pretty high level. And I've been a licensed nursing home administrator for about a dozen years and have loved that profession. The people that we serve in our assisted livings are the people that we served in nursing homes 5 years ago. They're the very same people. I remember serving them 5 years ago and 10 years ago, and now we're serving them in assisted livings. And they're in the place where people want to be. You know, firstly and most importantly, I want to thank you for your support last year of the 5%. It's gone a long way. It helps us. It is helping us. But we need to close the gap. You know, over the course of the years of 2009, 2010, 2011, and, that's 4 years, we had about 17% in reductions over the course of that time. And there is a gap. And this 5% really helps us to, well, close the gap on the cost, close the gap on what we charge the private market, and then when we're able to close that gap, we're able to care for more people who can do it in a more affordable fashion, which is just so important. My own grandmother is on the Elderly Waiver Program, and she's 92 years old, and she's very, very happy to be a part of that program. 5% for us means that we can pay staff more. It means that we can keep the costs down. It means that we can pay those staff that are leaving for jobs like gas stations and grocery stores. And I'm not disparaging those jobs. Those are good jobs. But these are caregivers. These are people who care for people, and it takes a special kind of person to deliver care. And we want to be able to pay those people what they're worth and what they deserve, which is, you know, probably, I have weighted average rates that are somewhere over 12.25, 12.50, and in some markets in the areas of Rochester, I'm at $14. So we do need to close that. I appreciate your support on the 5%, and ask again for your support in the future for that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Just to the testifier, you got my attention when you said Rochester.
Okay.
Could you just repeat who's earning $14 that you mentioned?
Home health aides.
Home health aides are earning $14 an hour?
In some pockets, yes.
Okay.
Now, that's the 95th percentile. And, you know, we don't always have to be in the 95th percentile. I use that as evidence of where it's going.
Yeah.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you for that. No, it's because I represent Rochester.
Yeah.
And I know that costs are really high there because you've got the competition from Mayo Clinic. And I just wanted to kind of understand, because I have a bill to raise nursing home rates in Rochester that's coming up here this morning. So it's relevant to that. That's why I'm asking you. But the home health aides, is that like a beginning salary that you have to pay in Rochester to get home health?
That's not a beginning salary. That's the weighted average rate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's the weighted average rate.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for this testifier?
Yes.
Seeing none.
In addition to wages, dollars do go to expenses too, and I do need to point that out.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Are there questions for any of the testifiers or for the author? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, for carrying this and for your passion on the floor last year to move this forward. I'd like to ask, do you know how many co-authors we have on the bill now?
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Newton, I guess I haven't. I think we have an answer right up here, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Considine.
I know that, Mr. Chair, that when I tried to become a co-author, they said they had the max and they were turning people away at that point.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newton.
Representative Hamilton.
Popular.
Yeah. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also thank you, Representative Hamilton, for carrying this. And you're carrying a lot of bills this year to help people with disabilities and a lot of these issues. And we all appreciate that. You're a great advocate for these causes, as you were last year. And I'm just wondering, you know, since you're probably more familiar with the actual the actual need here than I am. You know, when we did the 5% last year, actually we did a total 6% because we did 5%, pardon me, we did 1% in the first year of the biennium, then we added 5% in the second year, so it was a total 6%, and then we bought back a cut that the GOP had made in the 2 years before, which was a 1.67% cut that would have gone into effect had we not bought that back. So we really, I think, under partly with your leadership from the minority, we did a whole lot. You know, we did a whole lot in this area. And I'm just wondering, if we were to do the 5% again this year, which I have no doubt that there's still a great need, I'm just wondering how much we have to do before we're kind of back to, at least back to baseline. I mean, we know that costs continue to increase, inflation increases, but is this going to kind of bring us up to five? You know, five, it's a nice round number. And, you know, so I assume that that number is a little bit arbitrary, because obviously things are different in different places, as we were just discussing. Obviously, Rochester has really high costs, and different places across the state have different needs by a little bit. But do you have a sense of where this will take us if we're actually able to do the 5%? Will we be back 2 years from now with another 5% campaign because we still won't have met the need?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Liebling, I hope we're back in 2 years asking for additional dollars, and I'll tell you why. You know, we're talking about individuals who are caring for people. I work in the pork industry, and I'm a hog farmer, and I'm extremely proud of it. It is an honorable, honorable profession. With that said, we start people off that walk right off the street with absolutely no experience at $14.05 an hour. And you take a look at what we're paying these folks to care for our loved ones. You know what? This is an area that's been underserved for a long period of time. And I remember 2 years ago when Representative Newton was carrying the bill, and prior to that bill being introduced, I had folks in my office, and they came in and they said, what do you think about a 3% increase? I said, it's not enough. Why are we asking for a 3% increase? And then they developed the 5% increase, and along with Representative Newton's leadership as well. And we went and worked together, many of us, extremely hard. So this is, as far as addressing, a very underserved area. And if they come back 2 years from now, I'll be right there to support them again. So again, take a look as far as what they do and compare it to all the other jobs in the area as well, whether it's food service. And like the gentleman said that was testifying, those are honorable, honorable, noble professions. And with that said, these are the individuals that are caring for the people that need some additional help, additional services. So if they come back 2 years from now, I'll be right there to help them out.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton. I'm with you. It's a sincere question. Why are we only, if there might be another ask in 2 years, and if we're not up to the level we need to be, why is it only 5%? I mean, that's another way of putting my question. I'm really asking you, how much would it really take? Because, you know, obviously a home care worker, I agree, these people are valuable, and the work they do is tremendously important. But, you know, I mean, I'm just really asking, do you have a sense of what it would really take to get to where we really need to be? Because, you know, to come begging to the legislature isn't the most fun thing to do. How can we really meet the need is what I'm asking. Do you have a sense of what that would really take?
Representative Hamilton.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the audience, I guess this is considered begging. We're asking, doing the best that we possibly can with the dollars that we have available to us. And that's all there is to it. If you want to carry an amendment, let's have the debate. Let's have the debate. To give you a straight, honest answer, I don't know. And that's why we have the professionals here, and that's why we have committee process as well, so that we can all collectively debate this and discuss it, see what resources that we have available. And, you know what, it'd be great to just go ahead and open up the checkbook and everything else, but I don't think that that's a viable option either. But if you want to carry an amendment to increase this 10, 20, 40%, whatever it is, offer it up and let's have the debate.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, by saying begging, I mean to put them in the position of having to come and ask all the time instead of meeting the need. Representative Hamilton, I don't know, you know, if I've said something to offend you here, but I'm really, it's a sincere question. I want to know really what the real need is, because you know, obviously it makes a wonderful button to say 5%. And, of course, you have to pick some figure. That's just the nature of our process here. But maybe we ought to be building in some kind of inflation factor or something. And, you know, since you're carrying the bill, I'm just, maybe you have people here that could kind of tell us if there's been some sort of calculation about, you know, where home care workers really should be in the scale of, you know, what would it really take to have a really robust, good, ongoing, you know, ability to attract and retain these important people. I mean, that's really it's really a sincere question. So, you know, I don't think it should be a political, this shouldn't be a thing where, you know, these people are really important. We all agree on that. Bipartisanly, we do. That's why we were able to get this done last year. So I hope we can continue in that bipartisan frame and do what we need to do for the state.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lively and members, one of my favorite political figures is Mr. Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass was a black man. He was a slave, and he had the scars to prove it. And one of the things that he would do is he was all about agitate, and play off of people's hypocrisies. Representative Lively, and I'll remind you that just 2 short years ago, you controlled the House, the Senate, and the governor's office and raised taxes over $3 billion. Yet we had to fight tooth and nail for you to fund this area. And so if you want to get political and whatnot, I'm ready to have that debate. But the whole thing is, we're doing the best that we possibly can to address the individual's needs that are here in the audience. And so, once again, if you have ideas and you want to bring forth amendments, I'm all for it.
Well,
okay, Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, Representative Hamilton, I mean, you seem to be getting really perturbed about this, but, you know, when we had a deficit situation, when the GOP controlled the House and Senate, you guys put forward a budget that cut this group of people, and, you know, we were willing to raise taxes. I'm very proud of the fact that we raised taxes, especially on mostly on the wealthiest Minnesotans, and that we were then able to do some things, and that we're now in a really good position to be able to do even better. So, you know, I'm very proud of that, and I'm glad we were able to work together. I mean, if to the degree that this is political, it's good, because it works for people, and I'm very happy with that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember when we were in the minority, it was Representative Bly who had a wonderful amendment. He stood up and had a beautiful speech on the House floor. And then he said, I know we cannot do this at this moment in time, and therefore I withdraw my amendment. I was furious. I crossed off Representative Bly's name and wrote Hamilton across that amendment and sent it back up to the front desk. The speaker at the time was Speaker Kelleher. She called for a vote. It was a roll call vote. The board was held open, and I turned to the individual next to me and I said, this is going to pass. And then all the votes switched that were red, switched from red to green except for two. The chair in Health and Human Services Finance, which was Chair Huntley, and the chair of Health and Human Services Policy, which was Chair Thiessen. They're the only two that voted against the Hamilton Amendment, which saved the disabled community about $50 million in proposed cuts by your party as well. And so to sit here and point fingers at one party or the other is not an accurate statement. We all can take the blame, and therefore we can all take the credit when we're doing what we can to help out the great people that work in this profession. And so if you want to sit here and debate this issue, I'll debate it all day long with you. But I guess, you know, I want to hear from the rest of the members here, and I also wanted to address the amendments that we have before us.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Lilly.
To the amendment, I don't have a
comment. Oh, nothing for you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Liebling's question about why 5%, we have to do what's possible. And we know that we've got competing demands for limited funds. And last year, Representative Hamilton kept pushing me to get the 5% bill to come to a vote when our own leadership wasn't supporting 5% up until the very last minute. And it's only because we had so many members on both sides that had signed on. What we're doing with this additional 5 and 5 over the next biennium is getting us back to where we should have been years ago. not allowing for inflation, and we still haven't hit the minimum. And you ask where we should be, we should be starting people at a minimum livable wage, whether they're working in home health care or whether they're working in nursing homes. The fear that Representative Hamilton and I have, and we've talked to each other about this, is that we're looking at putting money into nursing homes and not giving equal amounts of funding for the home health care services and the elderly waivers. So, you know, we have to move both forward. The people that are providing this care do the same jobs, whether they're in nursing homes or whether they're in home health care. And I encourage everyone to support this bill and to keep moving it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Representative Newton, you're a good man. Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
I think Representative Liebling, the answer might be, what is the salary for those people who are leaving home health care and going somewhere else getting? You know, if you find out why they're leaving and how much they're going to get there, maybe that's where we start, is to make sure that we have to give those people the same opportunities as they would somewhere else.
Okay, thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gunther. That's exactly what my question really goes to, and I'm really interested to know if anybody's made any kind of calculation about what it would really take, because it would be helpful. I know we don't have unlimited resources. You know, that's a reality we all understand, and I know the people who are here asking for the 5% understand that as well, and thank you, Representative Newton. But the real question is, you know, what is that real gap? And I'm just really interested to know what that gap really is so that we can plan. I mean, it's really hard to plan, and I know that we have to make up for many years of neglect in this area. We are way behind, and we have the age wave. So I think it's important for all of us, even though we recognize that we can't meet every need, that we know that they are real needs, and we have an understanding at least of what it would take to meet them. So thank you, Representative Gunther.
All right. With that, we'll move into amendments. I understand that there is an A1 amendment that's an author's amendment, but that is not being offered. Is that correct, Representative Hamilton?
Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. Then there is the A2 amendment, which I believe Representative Lilly has.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, Representative Hamilton. And thank you for your passion on this issue and concern for folks. And it's kind of a consistent message that I've kind of brought through, and we've heard it again this morning on testimony on your bill, especially, you know, with each person, the first person saying, you know, about the wages. So I know you kind of alluded to it at the end with the last testifier, and but it's essentially saying that it does go to wages, and it's not, you know, it's not a tricky political thing. I know we're in a political building, but anyways, I think over and over we're hearing, you know, the first testifier, it was a little bit shocking for me to hear, and I've done this every time, so don't take it like personal, but I've kind of listened to what the testimony is, and then I just kind of say what they say. But the first person, lady, said, you know, that, you know, just missing one day of pay kind of led to like a quality of life issue. So I mean, just think of how fragile these lives are, and then just kind of going on and on. I mean, you all heard it, it's the same thing. So I just really feel that it's, and I realize there are costs and overhead, but I really think there's other ways that that the facilities can yield those and find them, and we just keep hearing that staffing over and over is a problem. So that's it. We've all heard it. So I don't want to.
Okay, Representative Lilly moves the A2 amendment. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Lilly, I know that, like you said, your heart's in the right place. We all want to do the right thing, and I truly, truly believe that. And I knew this amendment was coming before us. We've seen it before. And I think that it was offered up when Representative Newton was carrying the bill. And Representative Newton had to, you know, make the tough decision as well to do the I believe it was 75% or 75 and 25, if memory serves me correctly, as well back then.
And so I was thinking about this, Representative Lilly, and I'm a pretty simple person. And so I was thinking, say you're the author of the amendment. You own the facility, right? The rest of you are the employees, and all the folks behind me are the people in our care. If we take the dollars that you receive and give 100% of it to all the employees, right? That sounds great initially, but then all of a sudden, you're not able to pay the light bill. You're not able to pay the heating bill. You're not able to pay the food bill. So now, our friends back here are sitting in the dark. Now they're cold. They don't have any food. They don't have any water. You know, that lasts about 3 to 5 days. Now all of a sudden, they perish, and we no longer have people to care for. You no longer have a business, and everybody else is unemployed. And so it sounds great in theory, but we also have to have some dollars that actually goes towards operating cost. And with that said, you know, you can make the argument that they're already there, but the whole thing is you take a look at the rising energy costs, you take a look at the rising costs as far as goods to serve the wonderful people sitting behind me, and there's some expenses there that have to be covered. Otherwise, that will become true. The lights will go off, they'll be sitting in the dark, you'll no longer have a business, and they'll be unemployed.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Any further discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton. I do appreciate what you're saying, and you know, in your bill, it does offer you know, that there are ways that the facilities can cover some additional employee costs. So you are right. I mean, it doesn't cover light bulbs but compensation related to you know, some employee costs and those sort of things. So it does. It's right. You are correct. It's not a perfect. I just would argue that I think there's other compensation that the facilities are getting and would be able to cover and to deal with, but over and over we continue to hear that it's the employees that are really the problem, the turnover, to continue to offer the quality care. So, perhaps my number isn't perfect, but I really do believe that we just keep hearing that over and over.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if 75-25% is the right number. And I'm willing to have those straight-up conversations to figure out what that should be. I am concerned if it's 100%, not because I do not care about the wonderful people providing the care. It's simply if we cannot pay the light bill, the utility bills, the food bills, etc., then we're not going to have a facility for all the employees to work in, or facilities for people to receive the care. And so I understand it's a tough issue and a tough vote, but we also have to be, practical as well. We have to be able to pay our bills. So, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any final discussion on the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Seeing none, Representative Lilly.
I guess we are having a discussion, and I guess I would like to know where people stand on it. I feel it should go to employees, and I'd like to know.
What do the experts say?
Pardon me?
What do the experts say?
Well, maybe that's a valid question. I am going to ask for a roll call. I'm sorry.
Okay. Representative Lilly asks for a roll call. There will be a roll call. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, my name is Kim Crime from Minnetonka, and I actually do not work in a facility, and I understand the issues that Representative Hamilton has, but I work in an individual home, and there are thousands and thousands of Minnesota home care workers that are working in homes. We go to people's individual homes, and we care for them in their homes. I'll just tell you right now, my hourly pay is $12.65 an hour. I'm one of the highest paid in-home care workers. Most get around 10. If I went to be a nanny in my community, I work in my community in homes in Minnetonka, I live in Minnetonka, if I was an in-home nanny in Minnetonka, I would be earning $18 to $20 an hour. So that is the disparity, and that's why people are leaving. The reason I don't do that is because I know what it's like to be a family member, having someone live in my home, caring for them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I know how significant having a home care worker come in and help is with a family that's just trying to live and exist. We did not get any pay for caring for my husband's uncle. We did that all on our own. And now me being able to go out into the community, even at that tiny bit of money, I feel is a community service. If I didn't have my husband's income, we couldn't do that. We would not be able to have a home. We would not have reliable transportation. We would not be able to afford anything that a normal middle-class family does. So that is one of the things that I'd like you all to take into consideration when you're thinking about this, is I understand that there are facility costs, but a majority of home care workers are working in people's homes. There's no facility cost for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Please state your name for the record and briefly give us your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm Bruce Nelson with ARM, an organization of providers supporting people with disabilities. And the 75%, I don't know if it's a perfect number. Last year it was 80%. I will say this, in arriving at 75%, we did have discussions with organized labor. SEIU, for one, is on board with this percentage. There are other expenditures, and many of them are fixed costs, and fixed costs that go up. And without some latitude to be able to address those costs, I don't know if it'll be as dramatic as you were saying, Representative Hamilton, but it would be very severe and being able to meet those costs. One of those costs is training. And the what this bill is trying to address is mitigating turnover. But we're not there yet. There is a lot of turnover, and we need to be training new people. And that costs a lot of money to have the quality care of the new people coming in the door. I'm very proud to say that ARM, we policed this very hard last year, and we surveyed our members. We wanted to make sure that not only the intent of the legislature, not only the letter of the law was met, but the spirit and the intent of what you adopted last year. And I'm proud to say that, on average, our folks did give 5% and often more in salaries and wages and compensation. But it is critical that there be some allowance for the other costs in running, even in a facility. Even if it's not a facility, there are costs related to providing those services. So I'm happy to have those discussions on what the number should be, but there has to be some latitude to pay the other bills that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, would you be open to an oral amendment?
Sure.
I'd like to offer an amendment at 90% for on items in the... Can you... maybe staff could kind of help me through that.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe on the A2 amendment on page 1, line 2, you would delete 100 and insert 90, and also on page 1, line 5, delete 100 and insert 90.
That would be the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Representative.
Given the Lilly. Testimony. Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
To your amendment, Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, that would just, in respect to the conversation and the author's testimony stating of the costs related to employees and others, I don't know that the exact number, but I still really strongly feel that as much as possible, if not all, should go to the employees, just given that's what we've constantly heard. So that's the amendment.
Well, thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Lilly. And you know what? I would encourage the folks to support this amendment, support the amendment to the amendment. And Representative Lilly, what I'd also like to do is work with you. I know we have another stop, and maybe we can work with the folks behind us as well to find out what is that cost and see if it's not, you know, 25%, if it's not 10%, if it's 12, 8, whatever. If you would agree to work with me as this bill goes through, I would say and encourage the others to support your oral amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Lilly.
Hamilton, and we definitely need to meet Representative Newton as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, that, I'm sorry, that goes without saying. You know, that was implied, I guess. So Representative Newton, absolutely, we need you there.
Okay, next on the list I have Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. A couple of weeks ago when we were in Faribault, we heard that one of their staff left to take a cashier's job at Aldi's for $14 an hour. And we've heard $14 an hour twice in the discussion today. So I guess maybe if we're thinking of setting a baseline, at least right now, that would be a starting point. And again, I don't think it's enough, but at least it's a couple of dollars more than my understanding is most positions are offering. So that would be something. And I have to tell you, I mean, especially last year when we're out door knocking, there's a woman in that's still living with her parents that really doesn't want to change her job, but it's a struggle. Another woman in the apartment. I mean, there are so many people that are really trying to hang in there. We really need to do something, and especially I'm getting close to that age where I think my kids may be thinking about putting me someplace. We want to make sure we have things pretty nice. So again, this is so critical. We need to be doing something this year, and I was excited when we did something last year, and when we didn't do much in 2008 and 2010, and at least some of the facilities in my district have been really pretty stable, but the last couple of years I've seen the changes. I mean, people can't hang on much longer if they're still there.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, and I neglected to mention it. Please withdraw the roll call, and thank you for your support.
Representative Lilly requests that the roll call be withdrawn. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, listening to the discussion about this really makes me realize that perhaps I don't have the greatest understanding of how this money goes out. And we've done a lot of work here on nursing facilities, and we know that nursing facility funding is sort of in different buckets, so that you can raise the operating rate but not the property rate and so on. And so when we heard from Mr. Nelson, he's talking about employers that have certain kinds of costs, and then we hear from this wonderful woman who does the home care, and she's talking about her work, which doesn't involve any, you know, fixed property cost, at least when she's doing her work. So I guess I'd like to understand a little bit better, and maybe this isn't entirely the moment when this can be answered, but you know, as we're doing this, I don't know if maybe other committee members understand this and it's just me, in which case I'm happy to get the answer offline somewhere, but maybe Ms. Pugnelli can tell us, you know, I don't know if you even sort of, I don't even know enough to really know how to ask the question properly, because I don't know if we say 90% is dedicated to wages. You know, I think that the entities who get this money are very different from each other. And so maybe the answer is that we need to do something in the future to handle different entities differently and not have everybody in one bucket where we can't direct money to wages, even though we might want to. Ms.
Thank
Pugnelli,
you,
if she could address that?
Ms. Pinelli.
Mr. Chair, members, I think there are a variety of programs that are included in this rate increase. There are the ICFDD facilities, and in that case, it's the operating payment rate that would be increased. And then for all of the other sort of home and community-based providers, there's a variety of reimbursement rates. Some of them are grants. Some of them are allocations. In some cases, I think with the community-directed consumer supports program, it would be individual limits that would be increased. I think there might be someone here from DHS that could explain that in more detail, but it varies by program is my understanding.
Thank you, Ms. Pinelli. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. And so if we were to, say we were to increase, give the increase 100% as the original amendment stated, 100% to wages, if then for, say, the ICFDDs, that's only the operating rate, then we could, in theory, do something else for the other. I assume then that there are other rates that you could address separately. Correct. So it's really, it sounds like the way the bill is structured, it doesn't allow those things to be broken out. But it seems to me then that if there's a problem, I'm not opposing the amendment, if there's a problem with fixed costs for certain facilities, then those facilities probably need to come and tell us that they need certain fixed costs raised and not have it all be in this operating cost bucket. Because I think Mr. Nelson was making an argument that this operating cost increase needs to go for other kinds of costs as well, and I'm just a little confused by that. So maybe maybe as we move forward with this, I know Representative Hamilton, you're smiling. Maybe you know the answer, and it's just me who's confused.
Well,
but if you do,
Mr.
please.
Mr. Chairman,
I think Representative Hamilton was smiling because he's looking forward to having this discussion in the Health and Human Service Finance Committee. Is that right, Representative Hamilton?
Actually, I'm Representative smiling, Hamilton. Mr. Chairman. I'm smiling because there's a few members here that know that I cut myself shaving this morning. So I'm constantly, tending to that. And, yes, I'm sorry, Representative Liebling. I look forward to having this debate in Health and Human Services Finance.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, Representative Lilly offers his oral amendment to Ms. Pinelli. Could you go through it again one last time, the oral amendment, before we vote?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It is on the A2 amendment on page 1, lines 2 and 5, delete 100 and insert 90.
Okay, all those in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The oral amendment is adopted. Now to the amended A2 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment, as amended, is adopted. Representative Hamilton, any final thoughts on your bill?
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate the debate, and I look forward to having your support. Mr. Chairman, I ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And with that, I renew my motion. I make the motion. Actually, I got to call the meeting to order. Okay. Just a moment, members. We do have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And then I move that House File 564 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you have to make the motions for the amendments once again?
Yes, Representative Hamilton, I do.
All right.
So, Representative Lilly offers the A2 amendment and the oral amendment to on lines 1.2 and 1.5. to strike 100 and insert 90. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
The oral amendment is adopted. To the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment is adopted, and Representative Hamilton has had his final word on House File 564, so I renew my motion that House File 564, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 564, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Member.
Next, we have House File 1739, Representative Pearson. Representative Pearson, welcome to the committee. I move that House File 1739 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability, Policy and Finance. We have the bill before us. Representative Pearson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you moving House File 1739 for being referred to the Jobs Committee. It's appropriate that we're here today, though, with the Committee on Aging. We're dealing with a bill that's working with underserved folks in the blind community or vision loss community, and this is certainly an important issue for Minnesota. There are over 81,000 blind or self-reported vision impaired folks that live in the state of Minnesota, and much of that is attributed to our aging population, with 66% of that population being over the age of 65. 40% of the population is actually over the age of 85. So this is something that we care deeply about. And today I have a testimony regarding the bill and would be happy to share that at this time.
All right. Please introduce yourself for the record and welcome to the committee, and please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Kate Grathwall. I'm with Vision Loss Resources. The bill before you today is asking for an appropriation. As Representative Pearson just mentioned, we have a growing older adult population. This committee knows very well those numbers, how large the population of older adults is. As we move into the baby boomers moving across that threshold of 65, the numbers get big fast. What many of you may not know is one in four of us, I count myself at the tail end of the baby boom generation, one of the four of us over the age of 75 will probably have a visual impairment that will limit our ability to function independently in our home, do our own mail, cook, sort our clothes, handle washer and dryer, let alone stay connected with family and friends on the internet, or do our online banking, or all the things that we do in a normal day. What this appropriation is asking for is for grant funds to be created so that organizations already existing in the community can provide in-home services to help people remain in their home, age in place. It's very frightening as you start to lose your vision. People tend to isolate. We don't want to tell our kids because we don't want them to think we need to go to assisted living. So the idea behind this bill is if we can intervene early. And another thing you may not know is the services that I'm describing that are listed in the bill aren't provided within the medical system we know today. They are not covered by insurance at all. So these are services that nonprofits in the state have been providing generally at no or low cost to our communities. But with this large wave of older adults coming with probably vision loss, we thought it might be a good time to ask for the good people of Minnesota to help with this. So as we lose our vision, the first thing that people think of is, am I safe in my home? Can I cook without burning myself or burning down the house? Children worry about that same thing. So the idea here is a little bit of prevention, a little bit of intervention early can help us save a lot of money down the road long term. If I can stay in my own home, if I can spend $1,200 to learn the skills that I need to remain independent, I don't need to go to assisted living. I don't need to burn through all my assets. I don't need to end up eventually needing state or federal assistance to remain in some kind of supported or assisted living. So the idea is if we provide these services to people now, they won't need them later. And someone who can testify to that very point is with me, Mr. Alan Hyatt, retired assistant attorney of the city of Minneapolis. Alan?
Mr.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Alan Hyatt. As Kate indicated, I was an assistant city attorney for the city of Minneapolis before I retired. And at about age 64 or 65, I suffered vision loss because of a stroke. It's been gradual. My sight has gone downhill gradually, and it's now pretty much gone completely. Thanks to community organization, Vision Loss Resources, through their home assessment program and their life skills program, I've been able to stay in my home, learn skills that I didn't possess before. I did very little cooking, very little cleaning, very little anything until my wife passed away, and I had the choice of either learning how to do those things or go to an assisted living situation. I wanted to stay in my home. It's a co-op building. I like the building very much, and I'm able to stay in it because of the assistance I get through the Vision Loss Resource Center, where I learned those skills which keep me in my home. I'm very appreciative of it and feel that there's a lot of Minnesotans, as Kate pointed out. 1 in 4 people over 75 will lose their vision. Probably not totally as I have, but gradually and significantly. The aid provided by Vision Loss Resources in keeping us in our homes is very essential. And I urge the committee to support the bill and make the funds available that will enable Vision Loss Resources and other facilities like them to provide the services that keep people in their home rather than in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Thank you for your attention. If there are any questions, we'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Hyatt, for your testimony. Just a few housekeeping things about this, members. The A1 amendment is not being offered today for your notes, and the A15-0254 amendment that's in your packets was an amendment that was requested by DEED and DHS to follow some of the federal guidelines that they have with the funding, but it did not meet deadline. So if you're wondering why this is going to Jobs Committee next instead of HHS Finance, this is the amendment why, but we just wanted to offer this to you so that you had that background there. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got mostly comments, although I do have a question about what you just told us about the 254. I know that a lot of times when people are qualify for Medicare, that it does not pay for ongoing physical therapy and occupational therapy and so on that's designed to maintain function and is not not part of keeping a person on a job. So are we going to run into that same thing with this if this is tapping into that kind of funding?
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Yaruso, for asking that question. I was hoping to give a little background on both of the amendments, and I'll do that at this time. It was actually through DHS and DEED's conversation that they've asked us to move this through that program, and while at first it seems counterintuitive to have people over the age of 65 going through what would traditionally be a jobs program, because DHS would be depending on DEED's existing programs and structure anyway, they've both accepted this and wanted this requested change to be made. And then speaking to the A1 amendment, that was actually also something, speaking with both DHS and the partners that are currently providing these services, there's such a wide spectrum of what licensing,
credentialing is used for those specific entities, and so because of the diversity of each of the programs, both the DHS and these service providers have asked that that amendment not move forward. So I hope that answers both of those questions.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that explanation. I just hope we keep an eye on that, that we keep the intent. I really appreciate this bill because we have an opportunity in a very cost-effective way to make a very large difference in people's lives. People with vision disorders have been helped for quite a long time. You know, technology has a tremendous potential to help. I mean, starting with braille type and moving through the ability to scan a printed page and read it off. I have an aunt that suffers from macular degeneration, and she's still keeping up with us on Facebook and email and whatnot through large screen and magnification. And I also have family members with retinitis pigmentosa, and it's a different degenerative condition. And very, very recently in Minnesota, we had a first person that is taking part in a trial of an electronic goggles kind of thing to restore his vision. So we've got tremendous potential. And like I said, I think it's very cost effective compared to somebody ending up needing to have assistance to carry out those same activities. So thanks for bringing it.
Thank you, Representative Yaruso. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Please come forward. And if you can state your name for the record and give us your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Carol Fury. I am the CEO of Assistive Technology of Minnesota. Certainly support the needs of individuals who use assistive technology every day to work, live, and play in the communities of their choice. I am familiar with the program that's being discussed here. I just actually came upon this bill this morning and wanted to provide some input to the committee that I think would be helpful in making some determinations on the credentialing and how the program might roll out in a smoother way so that 2 years from now, you still have a program in place. And this is a two-year appropriation of $350,000 per year. I would like to make a couple suggestions, Mr. Chair, if that's all right. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is it okay if I go ahead with a couple of suggestions on the bill?
Please, briefly.
Okay, I'll go briefly. On the credentialing component, I think that it should be very specific who and what providers under the current rate system can provide these services. We have a tiered system, and under Tier 3, there are specialized providers, such as assistive technology professionals, who should be doing this work. And I think it's very critical so that you have a program that continues over time. There is a rate reimbursement for that service, so it can offset some of these other costs. That's probably one of the most important things that I can share with you, is to look at what is already out there in the way in which these funds are to be used. And then my second comment is, what about rural Minnesota? And how are we going to reach rural Minnesota with this bill? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Members, are there any questions for Representative Pearson or the testifiers? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Pearson?
No, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank the committee for listening to my bill, and I hope it can be approved and move forward.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1739 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability, Policy, and Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 1739 is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance.
Thank you,
Representative Pearson.
Thank you.
Next, we have Representative Bill's bill, 1581. And while he is coming down to the testifier's table, Representative Gunther moves approval of the minutes from March 11th, 2015. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to the minutes from March 11th? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the March 11th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Minutes are adopted. Representative Dill, welcome to the committee. I move House File 1581 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. We have the bill before us. So, Representative Dill, when you're ready, do your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for moving the bill over to the full Finance Committee. I have never testified on this committee, nor have I ever served on Health and Human Services, which so I frankly don't know all of the intimate details, only what I've learned on the House floor about Health and Human Services. I know it's a deep, complex subject. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members, I am going to introduce Adam Coe from the Good Samaritan Society, who has built a magnificent facility in International Falls after a long wait to get a new facility up there. My in-laws happen to live in it, and it's great. And so with that, Adam knows what the problem is. He will describe it, and then we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Thank you, Representative Dill, and Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Adam Cole, and I am the administrator at the Good Samaritan Society in International Falls. And we're here asking for operating rate increase to help sustain our services in International Falls. We have the privilege of serving a deep rural community in borderland area and have quite disparity in our operating rates and the ability to maintain and sustain necessary resources to provide quality care to those in need. And so one of the issues that we have been faced with is the ability to recruit staff. We did some comparisons in Representative Dill's district. There's 5 nursing homes in the district. Not only are we the 4th lowest reimbursed nursing home in the state of Minnesota, our operating rates comparison to those 5 homes are between $29 per resident per day to $114 per resident per day difference. So our ability to compete for staff, retain staff, recruit staff is our biggest challenge. The other issue that we faced is in 2009 a law was passed to transition reimbursement systems, and that went effective in 2012. The idea of that law was that we would go from a RUGS 3 payment system to a RUGS 4 payment system, and the goal of that law was to be revenue neutral. And due to the fact that we were in the midst of our building project at that time, which was downsizing beds, our rates were also negatively affected by that process. And so we're here asking for not only to decrease the disparity between rates, but also to fix the negative impact that transition had on our operating rates.
Okay, Mr. Cole, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, are there questions from members? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Dillon. And I think it's great that you're here trying to get the rate increase. We're all doing that, and it's really necessary. But I just, maybe this is more a question for staff. I'm not sure if I'm used to seeing bills where these rate increase bills where it's a particular dollar amount that's on here. Maybe could staff comment on that? Is that, am I just not used to seeing it, or is there some special reason that
Mr. Williams,
this one's structured that way?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, some of the other bills that we've heard would raise the operating rate reimbursement rate to the median reimbursement rate received by facilities in the metro area, which is probably technically a specific dollar amount that those facilities would receive. So rather than raising the reimbursement rate for this facility to the metro median, this one just raises it by $45 for all classes. I think we've heard at least one other bill, and I can't recall specifically which one sort of uses that framework, and I don't know if Ms. Pinelli can comment, but it's not something that is totally out of the ordinary, I guess I would say.
Okay.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we're in a hurry. I have no problems with the bill at all. I just maybe I'll talk offline with staff about why we do that sometimes, and sometimes we do it another way, and just kind of curious about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Dill, any final closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to listen to this and to see this well-laid-out paper regarding the rates. International Falls is about 20 miles from Little Fork Medical Center and Nursing Home, and they're $30 a day per person. This is a problem in need of a solution, not particularly, and I understand not particularly in International Falls, not particularly in Little Fork, but, I mean, statewide, and, I mean, I don't know how I can legitimately go home and tell people that we as a legislature can address the fact that one nursing home gets one price and another one gets another price when services are similar. And I just ask you to give strong consideration to this and passing it on to the next committee. And I appreciate the fact that they actually had the guts to come all the way down here and testify before a committee that everybody wants money. Well, this crunch needs money. It's not a want. They need it. They have to have it. It's an incredible facility. It was an opportunity in our community in International Falls on the Canadian border to have this beautiful, fabulous new facility only because of the strength of the Good Samaritan Society. No other private developer was willing to take this on in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Gunther.
Just out of curiosity, since International Falls is so close to Canada, what are the nursing home rates in Canada, or do they have them?
Representative Dill?
Thank you very much. Well, as you know, they do have care facilities in Canada because they get old like me up there and they need it as well. But that's nationalized health care, and I don't know if they'd even advertise. I mean, you realize in Canada, if you get ill, you go to the doctor and the government pays for it. And they pay for that with cigarettes and liquor. Those are their two primary sources for paying for their... So a case of beer in Canada is about $50, so those who drink beer would know what the difference is, and a carton of cigarettes is around $70. So, I mean, that's how they pay for their health care. It's plain and simple. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Representative Dill. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1581 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 1581 is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, Representative Dill.
Thank you.
Representative Isaacson is up next with House File 1768. Representative Isaacson, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1768 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Isaacson, give your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here today. I appreciate your guys' time, and I will try to be respectful and take as little of it as I can. On the campaign trail and in town hall meetings and talking to folks, I have a lot of seniors who are in fixed incomes, and what I heard over and over again at the doors and talking to people is that they're losing the slice of their pie of their income every year as more gets taken from them, whether it's in fees or taxes or whatever, and their income doesn't grow on a fixed income at the rate that a lot of folks who might enjoy a salary does, but the cost of living continues to go up. And so I sat down with some of the people that are infinitely smarter than me in House research, nonpartisan and partisan, and I asked some questions about how we might provide some tax relief. And I told on the campaign trail, I thought this is one way that maybe we can help lose or at least limit the amount that their income shrinks, the value of their dollar, so to speak. And so we came up with two plans. And unlike the plans you see to exempt Social Security or pensions and that kind of stuff, I'm a little more wary of that. My plan just simply chooses a socioeconomic demographic, so to speak, and says we're going to help poor to middle-income folks regardless of what your status is on any level in Minnesota here. So what it really does is it does one of two things. First, it provides for an extension of an exemption that currently exists that hasn't been updated for 20-plus years and just expands that on the income taxes. And I have to be very clear with you right now that I am way out of my depth when it comes to expertise about certain issues, especially as it relates to taxes. So if I misspeak, please feel free to ask me some questions, and I'll do my best to let you know what I understand. But the first thing is that it does increase or expand the extension or the exemption, excuse me. And then the second one is simply has to do with how we do property tax refunds, allowing both partners to claim an exemption instead of one in a household when we're looking at property taxes. And this is focused on people who are on a pension, 65 and older, or disabled. And so what I'm trying to do is provide some relief to those folks. I think that as we look at the coming, one of my constituents called it the silver storm that's coming our way, of folks that are moving into retirement, we have to be very conscious about what we can do to keep dollars in their pockets. And by doing so, it allows them to be stay home, have a better quality of life, all that stuff. And so this is one small contribution. Just for by way of background, both myself and Representative Davids worked on this. He asked me to drop this and get this to his committee. I was referred to you guys, and I was pleased that happened. Actually, it was really actually, at first I was a little concerned, but once I really thought about it, it helped me vet the bill a little better and be more prepared. So I hope that you'll consider passing this along to taxes.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Representative Isaacson.
You should have a letter from the AARP supporting my bill in your file. Is that correct? Did you all get that? Okay, great. Thank you. And they regret that they couldn't be here, but they will be here for future hearings if I'm so lucky to have them.
All right. Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Seeing no one in the audience who wishes to add additional testimony, are there any questions from members? Seeing no questions from members, any final words, Representative Isaacson?
I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Isaacson, I will renew my motion that House File 1768 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 1768 is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Next is Representative Newton with House File 1284. Representative Newton moves that House File 1284 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us. Representative Newton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that came about as a result of my having visited a nursing home facility that has assistive technology. And I would hope, Mr. Chair and members, that at some point after we get through all these deadlines, that we'll be able to visit a facility that has the assistive technology in it, so you see exactly what it provides. The assistive technology will permit people to remain in assisted living much longer, and thus saving the state a tremendous amount of money in nursing home care. And without going into a lot of details, I have a gentleman here who will give you some information regarding assistive technology, and you have some. And he has some of the devices that we use, so you get a better understanding of what it is.
Okay, thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jim Neuswanger, and I work with an organization that uses assistive technology on a regular basis, both in private homes and in assisted livings. One of the things that I would like to make the point of is this is not revolutionary technology. This is evolutionary technology. This is the next step to provide the best possible care and keep people grounded in their communities, as well as saving costs by having them not have to move into nursing homes or skilled nursing facilities. Simple sensors like this that can detect motion when there shouldn't be motion, or tell you if there should be motion, if doors are opening when people are leaving the facility, or more importantly, something like this. I want you to think for one moment about you being in a nursing facility or a skilled nursing facility. Every 2 hours at night, your brief is checked, whether it needs to be or not. And potentially within a minute or so of the staff person leaving, you could have an incontinence episode. You're being constantly woken up. Your quality of life goes down. The need for medications goes down. And you're rated as having the need to be in a higher order facility. Something like this can give you the opportunity to stay where you are and let staff know when you need assistance, if you need assistance. It can let you alert staff, let them know that you need assistance, and it can take the staff that are there without adding more staff, without adding more money into that particular piece of the pie, and have the care coordination be that much better. It can create more dignity, quality of life. It can remove distance barriers from family who may want to check in and see, what is my loved one doing? I can check this out right now. I can see whether they were active. I can see whether mom got up out of her bed when she should be out of her bed. Hey, it's 10 o'clock and she hasn't moved yet. I need to go check this out. All of these things can combine to create a better coordination for care, quality of life, and keep people grounded in their communities. And they're very, very easy devices to set up, and they will extend the opportunities for people to remain where they choose to remain without having to go into other facilities.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify from the audience on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Members, are there any questions for Representative Newton? Oh, we do have a testifier, it looks like. If you could please come forward and state your name again for the record and present your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Carol Fury again from Assistive Technology Minnesota, now known as Equipalife. The reason that I'm asking to testify on this bill is that we are the only statewide program that does provide assistive technology services from the beginning of the spectrum all the way through the end, which means to fund it and make sure that the person uses it and is trained. I have a concern I'd like to bring forth on this bill to the committee, and that concern is, what happens to the equipment in 2 years? And is the equipment being purchased for individuals to use or for staff? How is it replaced? What's going to happen after this money is gone? And that's really what I would like to ask the committee to consider as they look at this bill. The longevity and the sustainability of it, because it's a very difficult process. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Newton, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, the intent is to get this equipment into nursing homes, or not nursing homes, assisted living primarily. And anything dealing with technology is evolutionary. It keeps improving all the time. So we will constantly need to upgrade. But what it really provides for is that in assisted living facilities, you can reduce the staff dramatically while ensuring the care of the resident of the assisted living facility. And it also provides that people outside of the facility itself, loved ones of the resident facility, will be able to do also monitor their parent or a member of their family. So we know that this changes all the time. You know, technology does change. But this is to get it started. A lot of facilities, including the one that we visited in Faribault, weren't familiar with assistive technology. And I think that's one of the issues, is that this is there. Your organization provides it, and it would help a lot for organizations to realize that they've got something that would reduce costs while keeping people in facilities that are not nursing homes for a longer period of time.
Thank you, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Newton, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. We are going to have a couple more presenters next week that are also talking about new technologies, so this fits right in, and we can see what else is out there. So thank you for bringing this forward. Do you have any final words before we go to vote?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for your indulgence.
All right, so with that, Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 1284 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 1284 is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Thank you, Representative Newton. Next, we have House File 1552, Representative Miller. And while he's heading up to the table, Representative Miller moves that House File 1552 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. We have the bill before us. Representative Miller, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm asking that nursing facilities in Swift, Chippewa, Renville, and Candiota counties be increased to be equal for resource utilization group rate with a weight of 1.0 to geographic group 3 median rate for the same resource utilization group rate. I spoke with all my nursing homes, and they say this increase is needed. Thank you, and I stand for questions.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Are there questions for Representative Miller? Seeing none. Any final words, Representative Miller?
Thank you.
Thank you for your brevity. With that, Representative Miller renews his motion that House File 1552 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 1552 was recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, Representative Miller. Finally today, we have Representative Liebling with House File 1824. And while she's making her way up, Representative Liebling moves that House File 1824 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. We have the bill before us, and there is an author's amendment titled A1. Representative Liebling moves the A1 amendment. Representative Liebling, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to just incorporate an oral amendment. It's the amendment is encumbrance language for salaries, and it says 75%, and I'd like to move that to 100%. Because, members, the reason I'm bringing this bill is the salary issue. And anyway, if we could just put that on the bill, and then I'll just say a couple more words about it.
Okay, and if we could have nonpartisan staff help us with that.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would be on page 1, line 4, delete 75 and insert 100.
Okay, are there any questions on that? Seeing none. Representative Liebling makes that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. To your amendment, Representative
All
Liebling.
All right. So we need to adopt the A1 then, Mr. Chair. Is that where we are?
Yes. Okay.
All right. So members, that's just the standard encumbrance language that we've been using to encumber the increase that I'm requesting to have it go to salaries.
Okay. Representative Liebling is moving the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Liebling, to your bill.
All right. Members, thank you. This is basically the same idea that a lot of members have been bringing. My purpose in bringing this, and please note, this is not really about my district as such. I represent a district that's within Rochester. I think I only have 2 nursing homes in my district. This is for all the facilities within 30 miles, because all of those facilities are in competition for staff with Mayo Clinic. And Mayo Clinic is right now undergoing a situation where they have shortages of nurses. And they are hiring like crazy, or trying to. And there's a particularly acute situation because they can easily hire staff away from all the surrounding facilities. And, you know, I know that every one of our districts has unique situations, and this is one, and I felt that I would be remiss if I didn't bring this to the committee's attention, although I certainly prefer that we go forward with the chair's bill and redo the whole scheme here, and that's really what we need to do. But in the meantime, I thought it would be important for me to bring this forward because they are just in desperate straits trying to keep staff. And I just, in 5 minutes, I pulled up on the internet one of the Mayo Clinic's job openings, and their minimum pay for a nurse pretty much right out of school is $31. That's the minimum pay. And it's just really hard for the nursing facilities to keep up. So I would ask you to please support my bill, and I hope that it'll just be part of the larger discussion.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Liebling, this is not so much to your bill in particular, but it's all these bills that we've heard today and have been hearing in a piecemeal fashion. And I think, Representative Liebling, you're right. We need to fix this problem throughout the state. And getting bill after one county in this nursing home, I think, is the wrong approach. I think, Mr. Chair, that your bill we should look at and make sure that we pass it so it addresses this this problem all over the state. Because in my district, Hennepin County, you know, we have nursing facilities where, yeah, it's hard to get trained people as well. We have Southdale Hospital, we have HCMC, we have the most medical office buildings along France Avenue than probably anywhere in the state. So getting our workers who truly care about their patients a decent pay so they'll stay should be foremost in our minds. And I hope we get rid of this piecemeal approach and deal with the problem as a whole.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling. We've had a lot of discussion today about 75%, 90%, 100%. Have you talked to your facilities in Rochester that in your district about this bill specifically?
Representative Baker. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I have not, actually. I've had conversations over time with them about the general problem, and I had not been planning to bring a bill like this, and I'm really bringing it because so many have been coming before this committee that I felt like I needed to do the same thing. But I'm really hoping that it's not going to be about my district or your district. It's going to be about all of us because, and in fact, I feel a little guilty because I'm looking at Representative Gunther. This, I'm thinking, you know, this, my bill actually affects a lot of people's districts around Rochester, not my own. I've heard from a lot of the nursing homes in other people's districts that they're having this problem because I chose the 30-mile radius because people can easily drive in to work at Mayo Clinic in my district and leaving their nursing home behind. And I neglected to bring down from my office the list of nursing homes, but they're not mostly in my district. They're not even in Rochester. But I'm saying I feel guilty about Representative Gunther because it's even the Mayo Health System is able to draw, and that's much bigger, and it's in his district, and they're able to draw the staff out of the nursing facilities. So I'm bringing this because I feel like I need to do what, you know, I need to do this too to bring forward the problem, but boy, I sure hope we can fix the problem statewide because it really, you know, any of us, you know, they're all needy, and, you know, we just know the problem's there.
Representative Baker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I've been learning as my first few days and weeks and months here have been such a learning experience for me, and quite honestly, you've shown me and helped me with my bills that I brought forward, and giving your bills a lot of thought, and make sure that you bring forward good things that make sense. And as representatives, we are a conduit for our district. And so, if you were to ask those administrators if they would support this bill at 100% to go to the employees, as I came in here today, the 75% was to me a no-brainer. I think we all agree that this has to change, and I think every one of us really wants the bigger picture with Chair Schumacher's bill that is the answer to all. But I just wanted to make it a point that, as we've all said, it's about labor and wages, and that is the biggest component to this thing. I just know that when you throw in the 90s and 100%, you're taking away a lot of the administrators and their ability to run the best facility they can. And I just wanted to caution that it's also about a few other things too. And so I plan on supporting this, but I just wanted to make a point that that number is a big deal, 75 to 100%. It just says that the administrators don't have any decision-making process when it comes to this. And I just wanted to make that note and to kind of reiterate what I think Representative Liebling has helped teach me for the times that I've been here, too, is that this is an important number and that you have to carefully think about that. So thank you, and I support that.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Any response, Representative Liebling?
Well, just, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Baker. You know, ultimately, you know, I'm hoping that this bill won't be something that goes forward and is passed individually. Because if my bill got passed and funded and all of yours didn't, I would consider that a failure, honestly. So I think, though, that when in this situation, in my particular situation, the real problem is wages. And that's why I'm saying the 100%, because, and this is the operating rate adjustment. You know, nursing homes do have the other rate buckets as well. And I don't know that rates are, those things I don't think are more expensive in my area than they are in other places. So that's why I'm focusing this on the wages, because that is the problem.
in the facilities that are near Rochester. And that's the complaint that I've heard, so that's the solution that I'm posing. Thank you.
Representative Liebling. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not a question for Representative Liebling. It's more for you, Mr. Chair. Will we have a chance to see your bill as amended by all of these additional bills before it goes forward? I mean, are you going to have an omnibus bill that will be moving to Health and Human Services reform and then on to finance? Or are all these bills just moving separately?
Representative Newton, all these bills are moving separately, which if you're in the Health and Human Service Finance Committee, you're going to be hearing all of these again very soon. The House File 316, the major reform bill, is in Health and Human Service reform right now. I believe there's going to be a hearing on that on Friday, and then that'll move to Health and Human Service Finance as well. And so all of these are individual to bring forward to that committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any final questions? Representative Lilly.
My question is also to the chair. So what's your feeling? I know the speaker came out with some comments recently on some targets for, it sounded like on your 316. Is that, it seemed like it was a little different number that he came out with. And then, so what, based on those targets, what's your sense of with that and then with Hamilton's bill that came out? He was just commenting, the speaker. I'm sure you heard it. I haven't. I think it was 170. It's 175 million or something. I think I heard.
Okay, I'll check into that, Representative Lilly, and get back to you. But I'm not sure where those are coming from.
So you're still fighting for your, Mr. Chair. You're still fighting strongly for your targets to achieve your to do it in one big fix. I mean, because
yes. Representative Lee, at this point in time, I don't get to do much else than that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Liebling on her bill? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, members. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. With that, Representative Liebling renews her motion that House File 1824, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 1824, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.